everyone, it's your host, Taylor. Downtime is taking a break to work on a secret project. It's so secret, we don't even know what it's called yet. While we're away, please enjoy a replay of some of our team's favorite episodes. This week's replay is our conversation with Pauline and Giovanna from the Holocaust and Genocide Education Commission in honor of Genocide Awareness Month. Enjoy. And welcome to another episode of Downtime with the Cranston Public Library. We're a podcast for cool people who love libraries, where we talk about what we've been reading, what we've been watching, and what we've been loving. I'm your host, Taylor, and the branch librarian at the Oak Lawn Branch Library, and my pronouns are she, her.
Hi, I'm Pauline Getsoyan, and I am the chair of the Rhode Island Commission on Holocaust and Genocide Education, and I'm also the co-chair of the Rhode Island branch of the Genocide Education Project and an adjunct instructor of English at CCRI and the editor of the Armenian Weekly newspaper. I use the pronouns she, her.
And I'm Giovanna Wiseman. I'm the Director of Programming and Outreach at the Sandra Bornstein Holocaust Education Center. And I also sit on the commission. And it's great to be here. I use she, her pronouns.
All right. Thank you both for joining me. So a little bit later in the show, we will talk about the work that the Holocaust and Genocide Education Commission has been doing here in Rhode Island and why it's so important. But before we get into that, let's start off as we always do with what have you been reading?
So currently I'm reading The Lioness by Chris Bojalian. I'm actually almost finished with it. It's an incredibly riveting book, actually. And I wish I had more time to actually sit and read books. I have like a stack of books in order of priority. So some that I would really like to get to. There's one by Ellen Sarkeesian Chestnut called Deli Sarkis, The Scars He Carried. And then a teacher who actually received our Genocide Educator of the Year award last year. Her name is Tara Seeger. And she wrote a book called Refugee Realities, Voices from the Middle East, that is high on my list to get to as well.
Sounds so interesting. What a wide variety of books. That's great.
Yes.
I love to read many different kinds of books. The two I'm reading right now probably are just as different as can be. I picked up, it's kind of a reread for me, Far From the Tree by Andrew Solomon. I got it from the library, actually. And it's a nonfiction research book about children and parents who are very different from each other. So there's a chapter on cisgender parents of transgender children. There's a chapter on hearing parents of deaf children. And I read part of it many years ago, but I have always kind of had it in the back of my mind to finish it, and it's so good. And then as my kind of fun read, I'm reading Red, White, and Royal Blue, which, yes, the movie just came out. Pauline just gave me a big thumbs up. So it's definitely, yeah, very, very fluffy, very lighthearted. It's a love story between the Prince of England and the son of the U.S. president. So, yeah, definitely like a beach read in the fall. But I think Pauline can understand that with the work we do, sometimes we just need that pure fluff to read and unwind.
Absolutely. That's why I'm reading The Lioness too, even though it's a very suspenseful novel about a safari gone very wrong. But even though it's suspenseful, it's not involved. It's not directly related to the work that we do. And so we definitely need to have those reads that take us away from that. That's the whole point of books, right?
Definitely. And I guess I'm going to continue the trend of reading a little fluff as escapism because I just started Legends and Lattes, which I totally blanked on the author. It will be in the show notes. But it is a fantasy romance novel, like very D&D adjacent, that kind of like adventuring high fantasy setting. But the main character wants to give up adventuring and open a coffee shop when no one's heard of coffee. In this setting, coffee is like a rare gnomish delicacy. Mm. And so she's trying to like bring coffee into this like city that she just moved into and make it a thing and have like a cozy retirement.
Wow.
But yeah, I decided to jump into that partially because of a recommendation I got from another guest on an episode that we recorded fairly recently. But also I went and saw a friend of mine over the weekend and she owned an extra copy of it. And I was like, oh, I've been meaning to read this. And she was like, literally, I keep like a couple copies to give away at all times. She's like, that's how good it was and how much I enjoyed it. So like, you can take my second one. And I was like, thank you.
Friends like that we all need.
I was about to say, the best friends are ones that lend you books.
Exactly. Exactly. Extra copies. That's a brilliant idea of the books that we like to hand out to people.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
So besides reading, have either of you been watching anything to unwind lately?
So I will say I don't have a whole lot of time to watch TV, particularly during the school year. I feel like I do a lot of DVRing during the school year. And of course, right now with the writer strikes and the SAG after strikes going on, there's really not a whole lot of new programming coming on. So I'm actually grateful for all the recorded stuff I have. I'm a huge fan of, you know, Law and Order series and the Chicago series and, you know, those types of shows. But I have on high on my list, and I know the series just ended, so I'm very late to the game. But I've had so many people tell me that I really need to watch The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. So I have that sort of on my list of shows to watch, and I'm guessing I will probably get to it under the current circumstances, and that's good. There's so much out there that we can enjoy. And I have yet to get to a movie. Shame on me, because I have not yet seen Barbie or any of the other movies.
I recently did see Barbenheimer, and that, like, seeing them back to back was such a fascinating experience. And I liked both of them in different ways, but I think the experience of going to both and being at the theater the whole day and then getting to tell people that I did Barbenheimer was just as satisfying actually as watching the movie. You know, I thought that Oppenheimer was, I will not give any spoilers for those who have not seen. So no worries. I thought that Oppenheimer was well done, but when a movie is over 3 hours, I feel like there needs to be a reason. And I feel that it could have been shorter. And Barbie, it was just pure fluff. But I wish maybe the message had been a little bit stronger. So it was definitely more of a fun watch. And I knew that that's why I was there. But I think it was also kind of hyped up as this feminist kind of commentary. And I wish that it had done a little bit more than it actually ended up doing. And then last night, I randomly put on The Sound of Music because I love old movies. My childhood bedroom at my parents' house is old Hollywood themed. So I love like classic movies. And I just had a hankering, a nostalgia last night to hear some Julie Andrews, and all of those songs are still so great. And, you know, there is the whole, you know, Nazi Holocaust subplot, which somehow manages to find me when I'm trying to unwind. But it, regardless, it's still like a great movie. It still holds up after all those years. And just, I went to bed with a smile on my face because I watched it. So
It's one of my all-time favorites. Giovanna, I totally understand why you decided to watch that last night. And it's funny because your assessment of the Barbenheimer experience is very much what my daughter explained when she did the same thing, Barbenheimer thing in one day. And she said, you know, part of the thrill of that was being able to talk about it afterwards as going to see both. So
yeah,
you get to see them. I've heard a whole variety of assessments of them. But the one about Oppenheimer being over 3 hours is pretty consistent all across the board. So that doesn't surprise me because that's long for a movie nowadays.
Very long. Yeah. And I'll be interested to hear your thoughts once you do finally get to see it. And I'm sure your daughter mentioned this too, but one of the nice things about it, well, there was two nice things. One, the theaters were all really full because we ended up seeing it when it had just come out. Mm-hmm. So it was really great to be like around so many people. I feel like because of the pandemic and just the rise of streaming services and DVR and things like that, you know, people haven't been going to the movies as much. So it was really cool to feel like we were having a true communal experience watching it all together. And then the people that did Barbenheimer, you know, there were girls in bright pink who were sitting and watching Oppenheimer, and there were like 50-year-old dads in Barbie. So, you know, people who took part in both maybe got to see a movie on either side that otherwise they probably wouldn't have gone out to see if they weren't doing the double feature. So it brought a really diverse group of people together into a space, which I really enjoyed seeing.
It sounds wonderful. You're right. She did mention that, the same thing. The theaters being full, those two movies coming out at the same time certainly created a buzz that we haven't heard in a while when it comes to actually seeing a movie in the theater. So that's exciting. I love seeing movies in the theater. I wish I could do it even more. And hopefully soon I will.
Yeah, I remember right when Barbie and Oppenheimer came out that I saw a thread of like all of the times that two like blockbuster movies that were kind of like diametrically opposed in theme came out at the same, like on the same day. And I thought that was very interesting to see that like this isn't the first time that it's happened, but I guess this is the first time it's happened with internet, like with social media and the internet being as pervasive as it is now, for it to become like a hashtag Barbenheimer kind of thing. But it was interesting to see like all these movies that were like this really dark movie and this really happy movie came out on the same day.
Yeah, that would be an interesting study to look at, to see what the reactions were to each of those pairings at the various times that they occurred.
I mean, one of the interesting things too is that Barbie was the first movie by a female director to make over $1 billion. And one of the striking things about seeing both was, you know, how woman-centered Barbie was and how kind of like male-dominated Oppenheimer was. I mean, obviously, the story of Oppenheimer is about a man, so it's going to be male-dominated, of course. But yeah, it was just a really interesting dichotomy to see how like gender and gender roles were present in both movies.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps that was the draw as well, to see both together, was to have that juxtaposition between, you know, the female viewpoint and the female-centered film versus a film that has a completely different male-oriented theme, you know, based on the time. I'm sure that had something to do with the desire to see both together.
It's a good point.
What order did you do it in, Giovanna?
We did Oppenheimer first.
Yeah.
And honestly, I'm glad that we did, because I can't imagine leaving the theater after seeing Oppenheimer and then just going home. I think, you know, it was nice to have Barbie as a palate cleanser, and you know, you left the movie theater smiling as opposed to kind of feeling pretty down after Oppenheimer.
I would probably do it in that order as well.
Yeah. I'm
curious to see if most people did, because to me, that makes the most sense. As you said, ending with Barbie as a palate cleanser, I love that. Definitely makes sense to me to do Oppenheimer first and finish off with Barbie.
Yeah. What about you, Taylor? Are you watching anything good?
So I can't remember if I mentioned this on the show when I started the first season, but I just started the second season of Picard.
My dad loves that show.
Yes, I'm a huge Star Trek fan, and Star Trek Generation is my Star Trek because of my mom. Like, my mom knows like every episode almost by heart. And then when they came on in syndication when I was like in elementary school, maybe, I remember it would come on Spike TV, but at like 3 o'clock. So it was like perfect, like after school, come home, have a little afternoon snack and watch Next Gen. And it was lovely. And it was a lovely thing to share with my mom. And so I've been watching Picard with her. And so that's been lovely as well. And we both get excited of like, who is going to be the guest star that's going to come on like this episode or this season that we know from Next Gen, like the beginning of this, not to give too much away about the plot, but the beginning of season 2 starts off with Whoopi Goldberg as a guest star.
Really?
Yes, she has a bar at 10 Forward Avenue. But like when the beginning credits were running and I was like, Whoopi Goldberg, guidance, going to be in this episode. I'm so excited. And so, yeah, we just keep doing that. Q has been in this season, which is maybe like a mild spoiler. But again, this season's been out for a while. We're kind of getting caught up because neither of us subscribed to Paramount Plus. So we were like, oh, how do we watch it? And then I was like, maybe the library has the DVDs, which they do.
Another reason to go to the library.
Exactly.
So I'm enjoying it. And yeah, and the season is kind of like time travel shenanigans. Ooh. So love a good time travel shenanigans.
Have either of you guys seen Galaxy Quest?
No.
Oh my goodness. It's so good. This is like me and my family's obsession. My family also loves Star Trek. I haven't been able to get into Star Trek as much, but my parents are devoted watchers of Picard. So I certainly hear a lot about it, even though I don't actually watch it. But Galaxy Quest is a movie. It has Alan Rickman in it. And Sigourney Weaver, I think, is also in it. It's about a cast of people who are on like a Star Trek-esque show called Galaxy Quest.
Oh.
And they're all feuding. You know, the show's ended. It didn't really end on the best terms. But it turns out that aliens have been watching the show and they think that the cast of Galaxy Quest are like actual space travelers, and they come down to Earth to fight them. And this group of actors has to basically mount a defense against the alien invasion. And it is so funny.
It's hysterical.
The acting is so great. And it's so cheesy. Like, and it's a total kind of takeoff on shows like Star Trek. So if you're into that genre, Taylor, I think you and your mom would absolutely love Galaxy Quest. Just had to geek out about that for a second.
Yeah, I don't know. Not that she wouldn't enjoy it, but just that she like doesn't seek out things that like riff on the genre that she enjoys. Right. She just like watches the genre that she enjoys. But yeah, I'll have to see if that's on a streaming service somewhere, or if I could get my hands on it, because it sounds like fun.
It's very fun.
And we'll return to the show after a quick break. Did you know that 2 solar eclipses are coming to North America? An annular eclipse occurs on Saturday, October 14th, 2023. And a total eclipse occurs on Monday, April 8th, 2024. Cranston Public Library has events for all ages to learn about these eclipses and celebrate this rare natural phenomenon. Saturday, October 7th, there'll be a lecture about the science behind the eclipse by Brown University's Francine Jackson. Kids grades 4 to 8 can prep for the big event by heading over to the William Hall Library to build their own solar eclipse viewer. On the big day, there'll be 2 ways that you can watch the eclipse with us. at the Solar Eclipse Party at the Bain Track, or at the Solar Eclipse Picnic at the William Hall Library. Go to cranstonlibrary.org/eclipse to find out more. Looking for another way to keep up with what's going on at the Cranston Public Library? Sign up for our email newsletter. You'll be among the first to learn about upcoming programs for kids, teens, and adults, and new services and collections coming to your library. Subscribe at cranstonlibrary.org. To move on from that lighter note, but we front-loaded your episode with levity.
Yeah.
So that we could talk a little bit about the Holocaust and Genocide Education Commission. So I guess let's start at the beginning. What is the Holocaust and Genocide Education Commission, and what's the kind of work that they do?
So the Rhode Island Holocaust and Genocide Education Commission was established in 2021. The legislation was signed by Governor McKee, establishing a commission to support educators and in teaching about the subject matter, about the Holocaust and other genocides, and also to create more awareness about these historical events. And I can read the mission statement to you because I think it really exemplifies the work that we do. Our mission is to empower educators and their school communities to integrate learning about the Holocaust and other genocides as integral parts of their school cultures and studies. This includes overseeing Holocaust and Genocide Awareness Month each April and providing resources and professional development for teachers to enable them to incorporate these topics into their curricula. So that's sort of the mission of the commission. And we have 11 commissioners consisting from different areas of the community, educators and different communities affected by genocide. So the Armenian community, the Southeast Asian community, the African community, the Native American community, of course, the Jewish community. And so all of these communities have come together along with partners and other commissioners include, we have support from the Superintendents Association, the principals, the school committees, the teacher unions. So we have a very good, diverse group of dedicated individuals to this mission. And we meet every month to talk, but pretty much every month. We take a couple of months off in over the course of the year. But essentially, we meet each month to determine the best ways that we can support educators in providing this instruction in their classrooms. We also are very strongly partnered with the Rhode Island Department of Education. We have a representative from that organization as well as part of it. And then partnering with us are organizations like the Bornstein Center. And it's wonderful to have these organizations working with us, the Genocide Education Project as well. We all work together in order to bring information out to the community. We partner with the libraries around the state as well. That's a strong partnership. In fact, the libraries were our first partners for the inaugural Holocaust and Genocide Awareness Month last April. And it was extremely successful. And we look forward to continuing to partnering with the libraries. It makes perfect sense to do so.
I mean, Pauline basically said everything perfectly as our fearless leader. You know, she is absolutely the expert. But I wanted to clarify that I sit in on the commission meetings, but I actually was not appointed. The appointee from our center is our executive director, Wendy Joring, who is incredible and does a great job. But I am lucky enough to be able to attend the meetings alongside her and see the collaborative effort that goes into this commission. And I feel extremely lucky as director of programming and outreach that we are connected with the commission, who has helped us maintain partnerships with RIDE, with other communities. And I really think that cross-cultural outreach and cross-cultural partnerships only make us stronger. And so I've really enjoyed the opportunity to sit in on the meetings and to hear the various perspectives from people from different communities, because I think only when we work together are we going to be able to accomplish the goal of education across the state that we all want.
Agreed. In fact, that's the primary reason the commission was formed. Initially, we were a committee of people who came together for this purpose. And as our work expanded and we created deeper and more meaningful partnerships with different organizations, different communities affected by genocide, it created more of a coalition, which led to the legislation that created the commission. We're actually very grateful for the support that we have in our state, in the state of Rhode Island. Our legislature has always been extremely supportive of the legislation requiring Holocaust and genocide education in our schools across the state. We've also had great support in raising awareness with the Holocaust and Genocide Awareness Month in April. Various resolutions are always welcomed and passed unanimously in both the House and the Senate. So we're very grateful for all of that support community-wide. The partnerships that we've established have only reinforced the importance of the work that we're doing as a commission. We hear from superintendents and principals and teachers in the classroom, librarians, all the challenges that the various groups are facing in the school communities and out of the school communities right now. And it's been going on for many years, but it seems as though there are additional challenges now, making the work of this commission that much more important, beginning with things as universal as bullying across the school community, and beginning with educating about that and moving into the deeper explanation about genocide, the various stages of genocide, the warning signs of genocide, and what's happening in the world today. We only have to look at what's happening in so many different places around the world, but certainly Ukraine, Syria, various parts of Africa, and for myself, speaking personally, what's happening in Nagorno-Karabakh, which is known as Artsakh to Armenians, and the blockade that's been going on for 9 months, resulting in starvation, genocide by starvation for the people in that republic. So when we see these types of things happening, it only reinforces the importance of the work that we're doing, the anti-Semitism that we've been seeing rampant in so many communities. All of these events and occurrences and challenges that our communities are facing make the work that we do as a commission here in the state of Rhode Island and hopefully beyond. You know, we hope that this inspires other communities to establish similar types of commissions with a coalition environment, working together as a team in order to combat this type of racism and prejudice across the board.
And I think, you know, from my perspective, as someone who consistently is going out to schools and meeting with people across districts, teachers, principals, students, and mostly what we do at the Sandra Bornstein Holocaust Education Center is bring survivors into schools. The impact of that education is really felt. We had someone come up to us after we brought a survivor in to speak and say, I want to get involved further. I've seen bullying and anti-Semitism at my school and I want to help. So I think sometimes when parents hear that their child is receiving Holocaust and genocide education, it can feel really scary because it's such a serious topic. But when it's given an age-appropriate level, of course, you know, we would never talk to a very young child about such serious issues. But when kids are ready to hear about it and discuss it, they really take the lessons from these atrocities and they look for their roots, the roots of it in their own community, which of course is present in ignorance and prejudice and bullying. And they really, they respond to it very maturely. I am consistently impressed with the level of, you know, reflection and and a maturity that kids have when dealing with these topics. And you know, Holocaust education has popularized this phrase "never again," and unfortunately, I think largely due to lack of education, as Pauline has mentioned, there are countless cases where it has happened again. And so obviously, as people doing this work, our primary interest is to ensure that we protect the next generation, and that involves arming them with the knowledge necessary and also, you know, the empathy necessary, I think, to see people who are different from them as human beings and to understand, you know, yes, human beings are capable of doing this to each other, but we're also capable of extending a hand to people who need it. We're also capable of, you know, understanding people who maybe don't look like us, talk like us, pray like us, whatever the case may be. And I think, you know, kids, I've found that kids really respond well to that.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I also have gone into many, many classrooms and also worked with many different age groups of children. And as Giovanna said, it's important to meet students where they are in terms of their ability to understand and grasp the concepts associated with Holocaust and genocide education. And one of the things that we've learned consistently across the board is students of every age understand the concept of othering and making people feel less than simply because. One time when my dear friend and colleague Esther Kalajan and I were doing an exercise with students, this was extremely effective, as a matter of fact, to really create that understanding of how it feels to be treated less than. We divided the students, young students, into two groups, and just, you know, group one, group two, without any designation. And we had a whole box of munchkins, donut holes from the donut shop. And we told everybody in group two that they could come and take a donut hole, a munchkin. And we said, you know, unfortunately, those in group one can't have them simply because they're in group one. And the reaction was extreme. They couldn't understand why. Well, it's just because you're in group one. You know, only group two is getting them. And it led to the discussion of separating, creating this rift between groups and how that happens in any environment. Of course, we ended up giving everybody the munchkins at the end, but we wanted them to understand this idea that there doesn't necessarily need to be a specific reason why people are pitted against each other or why there is this prejudice against a certain group of people versus others. And we also explain that labeling is something that happens consistently throughout our lives. You know, when youngsters are in school, they join different groups, right? So some are on different sports teams, others do music, some do theater, some do, you know, other activities in the school, and they have their own group of people, but that doesn't mean that they're still not part of a school community. So it's important to meet students where they are at the ages that they are. And we believe on the commission that Holocaust and genocide education can begin in elementary school with care in how to broach the subject so that it lays a foundation heading into middle school and then high school where the concepts can become more more complex and where the history can be outlined more thoroughly as students become able to internalize the information.
And Pauline, echoing what you were saying, at the Bornstein Center, we have implemented a program called Get Up, Stand Up in classrooms K through second grade, kindergarten through second grade. And we don't talk at all about the Holocaust, but we simply bring books into classrooms and school libraries that are about kindness, about acceptance, about anti-bullying messages. So similar to your exercise with the donut holes, you know, teaching kids about othering and about acceptance. And that I think has been, it's hugely valuable, not only just to create a well-rounded student and, you know, to create a caring community member, but also to lay the groundwork for later education. Because, you know, if you look at the, I think it's the Genocide Education Project's 10 stages of genocide, the first stage is bullying. And a lot of people are surprised by that. We're actually, we run a teen leadership program, LIFT, as well. And one of the first exercises we do with them is have them put the 10 stages in order. And they are always surprised to see that bullying is a stage. But understanding that the practice of othering and the practice of arbitrarily separating people into groups, you know, based on whatever factor, race, religion, national origin, other factors, it's really so, it's so arbitrary and it's so damaging. And it can have this kind of ripple effect that I don't think people tend to consider. So absolutely, it's critical just to be reinforcing these, you know, social emotional topics for a wide variety of reasons. But it also serves our goal of increasing awareness about genocide education in the schools.
Thank you, Giovanna. You can see why it's so beneficial and so fulfilling to have the Bornstein Center as a partner with our commission. And the work that the Sandra Bornstein Holocaust Education Center does is so important and such a critical part of what we do as a commission. It supports what we do, and hopefully we support the work of the Bornstein Center as well. That's the goal. Our goal is to provide, you know, resources so that the Bornstein Center can continue to do its fine work along with the Genocide Education Project, as Giovanna mentioned, which I'm associated with as well. So all of us work together, and that's the idea behind the commission. And when we all work together, it creates a stronger message. It really drives the message home. In fact, Marty Cooper, who was our chair prior to me and also worked very heavily on the legislation to make Holocaust and genocide education requirement in Rhode Island schools, as well as the commission. But Marty really said it well, that we separately, it was difficult for us to get anything accomplished. But when we all came together and worked as a coalition and as a commission, there was a strength in the message that was heard when it may have been muted prior to us coming together as a coalition. So I'm very grateful as the current chair, first of all, to be serving in this capacity, but also to be working with such dedicated and motivated partners like the Bornstein Center. Working with Giovanna, with Wendy, has been extremely gratifying.
I want to echo that. The work that Pauline does is incredible. you are really a bridger of communities. And I so admire all the work that you've done, both in the Armenian community, in schools, and on the commission. Really, you are a force and a total inspiration.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That means a lot.
So before we wrap up, I wanted to touch on, Giovanna, you recently wrote an article for the Jewish Voice that touches on why some of the current trends we're seeing with book banning kind of connects to some of the historical things we saw leading up to the rise of fascism in Germany and the Holocaust. Could you talk a little bit more about that?
Yes, I would love to. So we're partnering with the Cranston Public Library for an event on October 4th. And it's going to be a panel discussion of educators, of librarians. The executive director of the Rhode Island ACLU will be here talking about the current issues of censorship, particularly in schools and public libraries, and juxtaposing it with censorship under the Nazis. I think when the public hears about these issues of book banning or book challenges, because of course it's not really possible, especially in this day and age, to actually ban a book, thankfully, they hear, you know, these sensationalized stories about how, you know, children are being exposed to graphic violence, they're being exposed to pornography, when really it is just a story about somebody who is experiencing genocide or from the LGBTQ community. And it's blown out of proportion to the point where I don't think parents really understand even what is being challenged. But as I've said, we work closely with the library, with educators, and everything that's in a library would be, of course, appropriate and not obscene in any way. But there is this connection that I think a lot of the public doesn't realize, who are using book banning to advance a deeper political agenda. And we saw the same thing happen in the 1930s when the Nazi Party came to power. In my article, I mentioned the story of Dr. Magnus Hirschfeld, who was a gay Jewish scientist, who he was kind of like the Alfred Kinsey of Germany, in the sense that he was one of the foremost scientists on gender and sexuality in terms of research. And he also advocated for those people to be treated with dignity and respect. And the Nazis felt that anybody who was from the LGBTQ community was not Aryan, was not interested in advancing the Aryan race, because they would not be, you know, producing in a cisgender heterosexual context. And so those famous pictures that we see of those books being burned, a lot of those books were actually from the library of Dr. Hirschfeld. And he was exiled to France and he died very shortly thereafter. Obviously, the experience was traumatic, you know, being kicked out of your own country. It's an experience that many people had during the Holocaust and other genocides, of being forcibly removed from their homes because of their beliefs or because of their identities. And there's a pattern that's going on here. And if we don't nip it in the bud, you know, it sort of opens the door for greater fascism. And I know that's a strong word, but greater political control of our public school systems, which ideally we want to be sort of as free as possible from partisan politics. You know, our concern, I think, as parents, as community members, us on the commission, is to give children a well-rounded, truthful, age-appropriate education. And there are some groups that don't like that. And we, I think, as a state, as a community, we have to say we're not going to allow that to kind of infiltrate a state-supported institution like public schools and public libraries. You know, we are going to stand firm. We are going to support the truth, the facts, and, you know, we're not going to let any political group, regardless of what side they're on, distort the facts.
Very well said.
Thank you. I'll get off my soapbox now.
No need to. You can stay right on that soapbox, Giovanna.
So if you're listening to this episode when it airs on Tuesday, the event will be tomorrow, and you can find out more about that at cranstonlibrary.org/events. So we wrap up the show with a segment I call The Last Chapter, where we talk about a library or bookish-related question, and I thought I would ask you both today, if you could have the answer to one mystery, what would you choose?
That's such a good question.
An amazing question. I think I can answer in keeping with the theme of our discussion, because this is where my heart and my head are right now. As a descendant of Armenian genocide survivors, as well as those who passed, I think the mystery that I would love to have the answers to would be the mystery of my ancestry. Because it's recreating our lineage prior to the Armenian genocide is incredibly challenging, if not in many cases impossible. And my brother is very involved in Armenian genealogy research and has been able to sort of go back in some of our ancestry a bit. But there are still many unanswered questions regarding what happened to certain relatives of ours, and also what their lives were like prior to the genocide. And we don't have any real knowledge of that, because as far as I know, you know, I grew up learning about as much as I could from my immediate grandparents. Primarily my maternal grandparents spoke a little bit more about what happened at that time, and my grandmother in particular. But prior to that, their parents were killed in the genocide, and very violently. And there was, I won't get into all of that, but I think that would be the mystery I would love solved. The mystery of my ancestry, the mystery of what happened, what life was like prior to the genocide, and the mystery of what happened to certain people.
Hearing stories like this makes me wish, like, have you ever watched Who Do You Think You Are, where they do like the genealogy? I wish everyday people could get access to this.
Yeah.
To this level of like expertise and resources, because it's money is the reason that they can go as deeply as they can with a lot of these people's history.
Yeah, you're right. It's a privilege to be able to get some of that information and to learn more about your lineage and your ancestry.
I want to echo that too. While you were talking, I was thinking about my own family. We didn't have any survivors from my family, unfortunately, that my descendants had already left Poland. That's where my family's from. And we do know the town that they came from and that they were living in around the time of the Holocaust. And it was a Polish town. It was about 20 miles from Auschwitz. So, you know, they obviously did not survive. But we know nothing about them. We didn't have contact with them after the war started. My family didn't have contact with them, and we never really figured out what happened to them. I would love to just know their names, even because the town itself doesn't even exist anymore, because it was completely destroyed in the Holocaust, and now it is not a town really anymore. Because of its proximity to the camps, it kind of is not a place that's inhabited anymore from what we understand. So I would also love to find out, you know, more about their lives and just generally, you know, so much. I think you can relate to this, Pauline, so much like culture, faith, practice was lost as a result of these genocides. And I wish, even if I could just have a fraction and the wider community and world could have a fraction of what was lost during the genocide. Yeah, just the intellectual and creative and cultural force that people like Jewish people, Armenian people, Cambodian people, among all the others, have on our world. And the fact that all of that is just destroyed is just a tragedy to me. And so I wish we could know a little bit more what their lives were like, and, you know, what they would have done had they not been tragically taken from us. And then more in terms of the center, we have a ton of artifacts in our back room that do not have labels. They don't have names. They don't have dates. And these are things that I think survivors, their families donated to us, but we have no idea how to get them back to people. And we have had a couple of people come look at them and say, oh my goodness, these are my parents. That was my great grandfather. And it's been so amazing to be able to reunite them with these possessions and memorabilia and photos that, you know, they probably thought were lost forever. And I just wish we could solve the mystery of all the things in our back room and be able to return them to the descendants of people who are in our community. So open call to anyone listening. If you or your parents or your descendants have donated anything to us in the past, please do come by. I would love to show you our collection and maybe be able to give you some pictures of your relatives. Or we have prayer books, we have tallit, like prayer shawls. We have all sorts of amazing things that I would love to be rightfully restored to a place where they're going to be remembered and venerated as they should be. Until that happens, we will obviously be taking very good care of them. But my hope is that one day they'll be all gone and all reunited.
It's beautiful.
So where can people find more information about the commission and also about the Sandra Bornstein Center?
So if people are interested in more information, we have an email address that they can email us. It's the it's RIHGEC, the initials of the commission. So RIHGEC@gmail.com. They can also call us at our phone number, which is 401-646-4799. Many of our materials are available on the Rhode Island Department of Education website. Any teachers who are looking for resources to teach about the Holocaust and other genocides, there's a great deal of material available that we the commission curated and vetted to make sure that the materials were appropriate, and they're all on the RIDE website, as well as the Bornstein Center has a great deal of information on their website, and the Genocide Education Project also has material on their website. So if anybody is looking for additional information, please don't hesitate to email us, to call the number. We will absolutely get back to you and be willing to assist with any needs you might have to teach about this subject matter, or even just to raise further awareness about it in the community.
Yes. So we have our center at 401 Elm Grove Avenue in Providence. It's located inside the Dwyer's JCC. And our phone number is 401-453-7860. So you can reach us there. And then we also have a website at BornsteinHolocaustCenter.org. And Bornstein is BORNSTEIN. We also have social media on Instagram and Facebook that's regularly updated with updates and events. So feel free to follow us on there.
Fantastic. Thank you both for joining me, and thank you for the important work that you do for our state. And thank you everyone for listening. If you would like to respond to our last chapter question or just reach out to the show, you can do that at downtime@cranstonlibrary.org. You can also reach out to us via social media with the hashtag downtimeCPL. If you're feeling generous, please rate and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts because it helps people find the show. Thank you again for listening. This has been another episode of Downtime. Downtime is a project of the Cranston Public Library and is produced by Elena Rios, Robin Nizio, and me, Taylor Cardillo. Audio engineering by Dave Bartos. Our theme music is Day Trips by Ketza, and our ad music is Happy Ukulele by Scott Holmes. Links to the books and movies discussed can be found in the show notes. Remember to rate and review Downtime on Apple Podcasts, connect with the podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram with the hashtag DowntimeCPL, and if there's something you'd like to hear on the show, send an email to downtime@cranstonlibrary.org. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed are the speaker's own and do not represent those of the Cranston Public Library. The material and information presented here is for general information purposes only. The Cranston Public Library name, in all forms and abbreviation, are the property of its owners, and its use does not imply endorsement or opposition to any specific organization, product, or service. The content of this episode is the property of the Cranston Public Library and may not be reproduced without express written permission. Join us next week for more Downtime.
Thank goodness for editing.